What's up, everybody? Thanks so much for tuning in. This is another episode of For What It's Worth with Wes Hoffman. Thank you so much. The podcast has really been growing lately. It's been awesome to have some really cool guests on. So I appreciate everybody checking it out. Really means a lot. So thank you. If you like the music that you hear, if you've at the beginning of this podcast, or if you like just kind of pop punk music in general, feel free to check out my music. It's just Wes Hoffman on any of the streaming services. I'd really appreciate it. That'd be great. That's the only plug I'm going to do on this intro. So this episode is with Maddie from World's Greatest Dad. My band played a show with World's Greatest Dad a couple of months ago now, and they're awesome. They're a really, really good band. So I would highly recommend checking their stuff out. Pick up their record on vinyl if you can. Just check them out. They're great. They're great and they're good people. But this was a super fun episode. We talked about touring. We talked about songwriting. We talked about the Atlanta music scene. We talked about a bunch of stuff. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I'm not going to go into too much else. But yeah, check it out. Have a good one. And sometimes I feel it goes. So we are recording. I'm here with.
Can I vape?
Oh yeah, you can totally vape.
Okay, cool.
Is that a weed vape or just regular vape?
It's just regular. Okay. They're getting banned. I should stop.
They're getting banned.
Yeah, they like I don't know if it's like a tariff thing or if it's like. That's what they say at the vape store, but it's like an FDA like crackdown thing. They've cracked down on the geek bars.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
So, did you like, not that we have to go into this super deep, but did you smoke cigarettes before and then switch to that or?
No, I smoked cigarettes for a really long time from the time that I was like, you know, a preteen or whatever to into my 20s. And then I quit smoking because I am a hypochondriac and I was freaking out. And so I quit smoking cigarettes. Also, they just like, it was just gross. Like, it just tasted not good anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I stopped, just, like, cold turkey for years. And then, like, a year and a half or 2 years ago, I got a vape for, like, the New Year because they taste so good. And when I'm drunk at a bar, I always hit one. And then I just didn't stop vaping. So probably time for me to stop vaping. The problem, though, is that it doesn't really make me feel bad, and it also tastes good. So it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It, like, takes... I smoked cigarettes for a long time, like a pack a day. And
yeah,
hold
same.
On, my dog's gonna want in. This might happen a couple of times.
That's fine.
Yeah, I smoked cigarettes for a really long time, and then like I just quit. This was before vapes. This was like in 2009. I just like quit cold turkey, and like I really like now you don't even see too many people smoking cigarettes out anymore that much.
Yeah, it's just like a bar. I feel like people like smoke when they're drunk and that's it.
Yeah, like, yeah. And
I'll smoke a cigarette if I'm like drunk. It's the only time it tastes good.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes I think about if when somebody's at a bar and or at one of our shows and they're smoking a cigarette, I'm like, oh, that smells kind of good. I have like nostalgia around it.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, man, I'd love to hit one right now. And then I'm like, I just have too addictive of a personality. I know that it would be one cigarette and then like I'd be buying a pack and then it wouldn't go well. So
yeah. I don't know. I say I don't have an addictive personality, but I think I have like I'll go through phases.
Yeah. I'm the same.
Like, and
yeah.
Then I'll be like, I'm over this shit. And then I'll pick like a new thing to be addicted to.
I'm kind of the same way. Yeah. I mean, I'm totally hooked on this little like disposable weed vape.
Yeah.
Like since the beginning of the year, we went on tour in California and, you know, California, it's like, they've been smoking weed out there for like forever. Like it's just, been normalized out there like much longer than here. So a lot of the guys like on the tour were like smoking weed and stuff. And I've been a weed smoker for a while now, but like, this is just like,
so convenient. Like, you can literally just go to like the bathroom in the middle of a movie at a movie theater and just hit it. No one ever knows. You know,
you can just be in the movie and like no one cares.
Yeah, yeah.
You can be at the Home Depot like buying some wood, and I'll just be like vaping like in the Home Depot, and no one gives a shit about what I'm doing, and it's bad. You shouldn't be able to do something all the time.
I know. No, and it's like, I talk to my friends about it because I'm like, remember back in the day when we'd have to like sneak around to like just go hit a one hitter somewhere, or like we'd go smoke a joint like behind the dumpster in an alley, like, and wouldn't want people to see. And like, now it's just like so normal. It's like kind of takes a little bit of the fun out of it, you know?
Yeah, it just shouldn't, I don't know. Things shouldn't be easily accessible for people like me.
Right. No, I totally agree. For me too. Anyway, Maddie from World's Greatest Dad, how are you?
I'm great, Wes.
So you guys just, we played with you guys a few months. It's been a couple months ago now, but when you came through St. Louis, but you just finished the second leg of your tour, right?
A few weeks ago.
It was like 52 dates.
Yeah, that's like off days and stuff too. But yeah, it was 52 days. For me, it was more than that because the van broke down in Nashville in between the two legs, and I got stuck there for like a little over a week. So I think it ended up being 62 days for me.
Wow, dude, that's crazy. So how do you feel? How do you feel now? Was that the longest you guys have ever been out?
I think so. I think we did one other DIY full U.S. tour that was pretty close to it, but I think we beat it by a couple days.
That's crazy. Yeah. How do you feel now that it's over?
Sad. I just want to be on tour again.
Yeah, I know. We've never done anything that long, but like the longest we've ever done is like a week, and we've done a week several times now, and it's always like after I'm home for a few days, like just after I'm home for a week, I'm like, okay, when's the next one?
I don't know. I don't really want to be doing anything else. I mean, I like writing and recording, but unless like there's structure around it, it doesn't feel the same, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm just like, all right, when are we going to go on tour again?
What would you say is it that you love so much about just being on the road, or what are a few things that obviously it's like it, you have a connection with it?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's like pretty easy for me because I was kind of like mildly homeless throughout my early 20s, and like even when I was little, like I moved around a lot, like not to like different states but just within the same state. So like, I don't know, I think that I thrive in like a environment that is like something new every day, new people every day, but there's still like structure in it, you know, like you do the same thing every day, but there's just like you have this one thing that you have to do, and then everything else in between is like, well, we just do whatever we want because there's the one thing we have to do, you know? I don't know. And you don't have to work, so like, I don't like working, so
that's definitely one of the best parts about it is not having to work. But no, I agree. I mean, just for those are all things that I love about it too. It's just like, I love meeting new people. Like, that's one of my favorite things. And like, I talk about this a lot on the podcast, like a lot of music business is like, it's all about like meeting new people and making connections anyway. And, even now, like, I've saw this when you guys came through St. Louis, I know, and we feel the same, like, now we have friends in a lot of the places that we've played multiple times. So it's like when we go to Milwaukee or Chicago, it's like, oh, well, we know this person's coming out, or we're going to meet up with our friend Chris for lunch or before we eat the show or whatever. And, you know, I know you guys have a lot of, and you also have like a diehard fan base right now, you know, that comes out and sees you guys. So I would think that's really cool.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's like, the friend thing, like meeting other people that do the same thing that you do, and like understand it in that sort of way, I think is like super important. And like, yeah, when I get home, like I have friends here, obviously, you know, but you make like way more friends and you make them in all these different places and you don't get to see them most of the time. So when you're on tour, it's kind of the only time you do. So yeah, it's like seeing my best friends like throughout a span of, you know, 2 months or almost 2 months or whatever, you know, which is really nice. And you're just like hanging out with people. And I don't have like I do coffee catering at home. So I don't have like a job where I go be around the same people every day. Like I show up at a different office. People that, you know, work in the financial department or whatever the fuck. And so like, I don't know. It's nice to just be around people where, you know, at least some of the people there have something in common with you and kind of understand what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever like described being a musician at like this level of musician to people who aren't musicians, but like they don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely weird. It's especially like, you know, we've, for me, just like it can I can relate a little bit. Cause I like we've done stuff where we've flown, like when we fly out to California, we flew out to California in March and did a tour and then we came home and it was like the day after we came home, like I was back at my desk, just like looking at resumes and just like life had, you know, and everybody else that was at work had like been there the whole time and like they don't know what I went through, and you know, on all the shows were like so awesome and it was super fun and it was like really far away. I'm from, you know, living in St. Louis, like California just feels like a different world. And it just feels weird and different. And it's like it when I'm in that environment, I feel like during those times, like now, you know, I've been home for like, we haven't been on the road for a minute. So it's like, it just feels, I settle back into like normalcy, but it's like, when I have those weird days where it's like I was just on tour like 2 days ago for like a week and then people don't understand it and it's like you feel kind of misunderstood or like out of place, you know what I mean?
I feel like the most myself when I'm on tour, and then everything else is like, all right, I'm having to figure out what to do here.
Exactly. So tell me about, so I love your guys' new record. I know that you guys have been doing the thing, the World's Greatest Dad thing for a while, but I've really just jumped on the train with the most recent record. So I'd be interested in knowing, because you guys have like a little bit of a, I don't know if you'll like this term or not. You have a little bit of a Midwest emo feel to me, but like also just like, really good catchy like pop rock songs, which is, I love that. So I would love to just hear kind of what your influences are and you know, what you like kind of grew up listening to and how that's, how you've incorporated that into your music.
I don't know, it's like a mixed bag. When I was like my first experiences with music, like my mom listened to like a bunch of butt rock and grunge, and then my grandma listened to like classic rock, and my aunt, she like was like a goth kid in like the 80s and early 90s.
Okay.
So she was like super into like The Cure and The Smiths and all of that shit, and so that's like what I. Oh, and my mom, like, yeah, it was like a lot of country too. Like I grew up. From the time that I was like 9 to 13 or something like that, I lived on like 10 acres of land, in the swamp. And so, yeah, it was a lot of country music then. And then like mall emo.
Okay.
from there, you know, cause I was like a weird kid living in the sticks. As like an early adult, it was just like a lot of Bright Eyes, and I don't know. I think I listened to like what every other like lower class white kid probably
listens to. Sure.
You know, like your family listened to country probably and like rock, and then you had like an emo phase, and then when like the indie sleaze shit came out, you listened to that, and then like, you know, but and like throughout all of that, you're like, fuck the last thing, fuck the last thing, and then like in your 20s, you realize all of this was good, and you rotate between like really weird obscure indie music and like 90s pop country.
Yeah. Hey, there was some bangers. Like 90s pop country had some really, really good, like,
I argue that it's like the best songwriting.
I mean, when you talk about like radio, like Garth Brooks and Brooks and Dunn and stuff like that, it was, I mean, they had hits, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Garth Brooks was like my mom's hall pass. Which is like fucking insane. But like not who I would choose, but yeah, like I listened to Garth Brooks CDs on repeat in the car with my mom.
Yeah, me too. My parents were all about it. Like,
yeah
he's really like none of his stuff is on spot or it's on any streaming platform.
Yeah, I think he has like the most money.
Yeah, probably because of that.
I mean, no one else can do that now. Like, you have to have, like, been grandfathered into being able to do that. But, yeah, like, he's still, like, one of the most famous, like, at one point he was, like, the most famous, like, and I would just say pop musician because that's, like, really what he is.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, for sure.
But I think that's where all of the pop influence comes from, is from country. It's not from, like, regular pop music. I never really listened to, I mean, like, I knew, like, the hits or whatever that, like, played at kids' birthday parties or something. But, sure. Like, I was never really into that because my family wasn't.
So are you, like, the main, as far as songwriting goes, like, are you the main songwriter in World's Greatest Dad, or is it, like, a collaborative effort, or how do you guys, when you come together to write stuff, what's normally your, I hate to say your process, but how does it all come together? How does it all come together for you guys?
I write mostly, like, you know, words and melody and most of the structure. I write all of that. Usually on an acoustic guitar.
Okay.
And then since the last record, the way that that got written was we demoed a bunch of it out, and Ben, who like is our honorary bassist at this point, he does most tours with us, but he's who produced that record and the first record. We kind of like passed them off to him, and he did his little, you know, producer stuff. And then it was during COVID, so like we had to like wait and then meet for a little while.
Yeah.
But then everybody has to try and get work, and then, you know, so it took a really long time to record and finish. But yeah, it was kind of written, I would say, remotely in a way.
Oh wow.
And then, which is like a lot different than the first record. I had a different drummer and I had a different bassist, and we like pretty much lived together at one point, and that record got written like collectively, and then demoed and then sent to Ben, you know?
Sure.
As far as like drum parts and bass parts, like they all kind of came together with me, like kind of as I was writing them, because I'd be like, hey y'all, I got this song, and then we'd have band practice. Right, you know. So it's definitely changed, and it'll probably get the next record will get done in the same way, I assume, just because, you know, you get older, people are busy, they don't live with you anymore.
yeah, no, for sure. I think it's kind of you know, with my band, I'm the same way. I'm like, I'm the main songwriter like you. I like usually sure. have a melody or a riff, and like, and I like, you know, I kind of structure it all out and send it to the other guys. And I'm kind of like, hey, here, learn this. And then they, you know, the drums are always, I don't play drums. So like the drums are always different than what I just have an idea of what I want it to sound
like. Do you like computer drums?
I just do like GarageBand. You can do like little automated drums.
Yeah, you use the drummer.
Yeah.
His name's Logic Kyle. Has a little drummer too. Sometimes I use a little drummer if I don't like already have an idea, and then I'll just plug it into like MIDI. But
I want to start doing MIDI. Is that pretty easy to pick up?
Super easy. Okay. Yeah. Like, can you right click?
So do you have like a little pad that you like tap it out on, like boom, cap, cap?
I don't. I do everything bad and slow and wrong, though. I'm like a bad computer person, and I'm a bad DAW person. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, like, ever. But in the way, and also there's like a million ways to do one thing. Like in every single program, there's like more than one way to do something. And so I always learn like the most rudimentary, like longest way to do something. And then when somebody tries to teach me to do it a different way, I am like, this is not how I do this. I do this like asinine way that takes three times as long. I just like copy paste, and then you can just copy paste the notes. So it's like a piano roll, and then like to the left in Logic anyway, it'll like have what drum is like on what line.
Oh, okay.
And you like literally just put a note where you want a note, and it'll play the sound. And then you can like fuck with the velocity of like the hits so that like it sounds a little bit more natural.
Okay.
But for me, like, I have a drummer who has a studio, so, like, I don't really care about that, about making them sound too good, because I just need him to understand the idea.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same way. I'm kind of like, okay, I just want, like, a syncopated thing here. I don't want what it has that I put in there, but can you come up with something that sounds kind of like this and, you know.
Yeah, vibe-wise. Yeah,
and it's always 10 times better than what I thought.
Yeah, I'll do, like, we were just talking about this, actually, because there's a bunch of crap that I need to demo out, but I was just like, I'm going to send you, like, a just guitar and vocal track, and then I want you to, like, dick around with it and do what you want to do, but then I'll also send you, like, my ideas for the other instruments in a different session file. You listen to that afterwards, and then, you know, if something I did makes more sense, then cool, and if not, that's fine.
Yeah. No, I like that idea, too. Yeah, that's cool. It's, it's always just interesting to me to hear how every band is just a little bit different of how they do everything, you know what I mean? Because like you said, there's a million ways to do one thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if we had the time, like, I would love for everybody to come over and we spend a week hating each other and come up with, like, a cool, you know, record, but it's just, like, not how the economy works.
Yeah.
People like us at this point. Not at this age.
Right. So did you... When you started World's Greatest Dad, did you have the idea in mind of like that you wanted to be doing the things that you're doing now and doing these like longer tours and putting out albums and, you know, working with like labels and stuff like that? Or did it kind of just start out like, hey, we're just doing this for fun and seeing where it goes? Or did you have like a vision in mind?
I didn't have a vision, but that was because I didn't know anything. like, if somebody would have told me when I was, like, 16 that you could just have a band and then, like, send some emails and then go on tour, I would have been doing that the whole time. I had no idea that was, like, something you could just do, you know? I had no concept of a music industry or what it actually was, you know? So I just knew that I liked playing music and I liked being in bands. I always wanted it to be successful. Like, I still would like for it to be successful. But I didn't really like understand what that meant, like, or even know that you could book a tour yourself or who to talk to or anything about labels, really, honestly. I didn't know any of that stuff. It got like introduced to me as I was doing it. And, yeah, I wish somebody would have been like, did you know you can do all of this yourself?
Yeah.
out to people, and I just had no idea.
So at what point did that start changing, and were you like, oh, we're gonna go on tour now?
We put out like a EP in 2016, I think. And we made that at a studio that like a friend of mine had, who I just met from people making music. And then we started playing like DIY, like local shows and stuff. And then like got the opportunity to get on a festival that was happening here through like a voting, like a, you know, like a vote for my band, like
what fest? What fest?
Oh, Wrecking Ball.
Oh, I went to Wrecking Ball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So 2016 was the year that we got to play, and then I was like, this is so
I was at that
cool.
fest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I was like, oh, and like we started like getting opening like slots for like bigger bands coming through town and stuff, and then I booked like our first DIY tour because we were having house shows and like meeting bands from other cities and stuff, you know. And so that's when I kind of was like, oh, like you just like ask this band in this place like what the deal is in their city, and then you figure it out, and then you go and you play the show. And you know, we bought a van and like we're like, okay, like this is what we're doing, you know.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
My band is actually, we're working on, we've never played Atlanta. We've played Florida. You're from Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
So we've never played Atlanta, but we've played a bunch of places in Florida and like Tennessee. So like above and below. what's the scene like there?
I feel like I'm not a very good person to ask at this point. I'm sure there is like somebody else carrying the torch right now. I have no idea who they are as far as like DIY stuff goes.
Sure.
But I mean, there's a bunch of good bands here. Keegan probably would know better than me.
Okay.
Our guitarist, he like records and stuff. So he meets a lot of like other people making music. I've been like a bad supporter.
Yeah. The only two bands that I really know, we're friends with this band called The Carolyn. I don't know if you're familiar. Yeah, we're friends with them. We played a fest with them in New York last year. And then, New Junk City.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, oh, they're so good.
God is the sweetest.
Yeah, I've never met them before, but I've been emailing them. Like, I've been like, hey, do you guys like I want to do a tour with you sometime. And
yeah.
they're always just like, oh, well, you know, we're not really doing very much or whatever. They are, you know.
Yeah, they're one of those bands. They'll like play fest. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So no, that's cool. I'm excited to check it out. I really want to play one of the smaller rooms at Masquerade. So
yeah, Purgatory, and then they've got like a new room called Altar.
I'm hoping we can make something happen.
Y'all should
there,
just book it. Are you all playing fest this year?
Dude, I want to so bad. We have emailed Tony a ton of times and like reached out, and everybody tells us like when we play little festivals and when we play in Florida, we just played in Florida, in Orlando area in February, and everybody was like, "Are you playing fest? Are you playing fest?" And I was like, "I would love to play fest," but and somebody else on this podcast just asked me if we were playing too, and I was like, "I would love to play it," but like. We can't get an answer back from the dude that, like, books the thing.
Did you annoy him?
What's that?
Did you annoy him? Sometimes you... Well, first of all, you have to email him super early in the year.
Yeah, everybody always tells me that. Yeah, we try to, like... I try to, like, tactfully annoy. but, yeah, we have a lot of friends in Florida and, like, a lot of people that are, like, yeah, we'll kind of, like, go to bat for you this next year. When submissions.
My advice for bands emailing is to just be annoying. But like acknowledge that you're being annoying, you know? Just be like, hey, I'm here to annoy you.
Yeah.
Please play your festival. It's all I want in the entire world. I'll give you three wishes.
I've found that like, I've heard people say, because my background's in sales and like I'm a recruiter now. I've been in recruiting for like 10 years. And I've heard people say when it comes to music, like, oh, well, I wouldn't follow up with somebody more than this amount of times, or I wouldn't do this. If they don't respond after a certain amount of times, then like that means no. And I'm like, no, I'm like, dude, I've gotten a show one time. I won't say the name of the venue, but I emailed this dude like over, it was at least 7 times with no response. And then he finally got back, because I start booking our shit like 6 months in advance, because those things happen. Like, yeah. That, you know, it's like, well, that's going
to
give me
it
enough
does time. Happen. That happened to me on this last tour. Like, I totally, like, there was like some venue I emailed, and I was like, well, that's not going to fucking work. And so I started emailing other venues and get another venue, and then I get like an email back like a month before we're supposed to leave for tour, being like, hey, yeah, you've got the date, like, you know, first hold, like, this is what we can do for you. And it's just like, okay, well, like, we leave for tour in a month, like.
Right. No, dude.
It's just because nobody, like, A, like, their inboxes are so fucking piled up. I can't imagine what Tony's inbox looks like, I feel for him.
Oh, I can't imagine, yeah. Thousands.
And, you know, it's like, I don't even, I'm bad about replying to emails for, like, my, well, for the band, but also for, like, my catering thing, like, and I'm just like fucking myself out of money all the time because I just like don't feel like it. Like, I know it takes like 5 seconds for me to open it and type something and reply, but I'm just like, there's just something that paralyzes me and I can't do it. And I know that that's the same feeling that, like,
yeah,
whoever I'm emailing is getting anytime I email them.
No, I totally know what you mean. It's the inertia. It's the like, okay, now I gotta respond. It's just, there is something, like, even though the act
of getting up to take a shower.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like the whole time you're dreading it. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh. And then, like, you're in the shower and you're like, this is great. Like,
yeah.
It was so easy. Why didn't I just do this to begin with?
No, it's true. And I'm just under the school of thought of, like, I have a right to ask an email, and, like, you know, they owe me a response back, even if it's no. And I would rather somebody like just tell me, no, we don't have the date, than like, because then if I follow up 17 times and I finally get an answer that's like, no, you can't play here, we don't have the date, it's like, why didn't you just tell me that after the first one? Like,
they just don't want to. Like, it's the obligation, I think. Like, people don't like feeling obligated to do something.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
I don't. That's why I don't reply to the emails.
Like, hey, you replied to this one, so I appreciate it.
Well, that's different. I know you.
So what's – okay, we're running out of time here. We got seven and a half minutes left. So, yeah, you guys, you put your most recent record out with Side One Dummy. I'm a big fan of that label, past and present. I'd be interested to know, like, how did that all come together?
I think we actually have Carpool to thank for that. We played Fest a couple years ago, and Phil from Side One Dummy was going to the Carpool show anyway. We were playing, I think, right before them. And yeah, he saw our set, and then he talked to, I think, Matt, someone, and then hit us up, and they liked the record and they wanted to put it out, and I was like, that's great, because no one else does. Here you go.
No, that's awesome.
You lost, motherfucker.
Those stories, I was just talking on the last episode, those stories about, like, you know, I always thought that, like, when you would sign with a record label that, like, you know, because it was something that I always wanted. I grew up with, like, when the labels were, like, Vagrant.
Had money?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Where they, like, actually gave you money for the record to, like, go record. Yeah. No, but, like, you know, there was like, Vagrant and Drive Thru and Tooth & Nail and all these labels that, like, I was a super big fan of when I was a kid. And I was like, oh, man, if we could just get signed, like, that would be awesome. And it's, like, you know, now we've put a record out with a label, and we just signed with a different one. And it's like, it's really just like, it's not as, I mean, it's exciting. I'm super thankful that like anybody is willing to put out my music and invest any money into like putting it on vinyl or promotion or anything like that. But it like, it's just not as big of a, like, I thought there would be some kind of ceremony or something. Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking, but it's just literally like an email that was like, hey, yeah, we really like this record. We love to put it out. Like, what's your plan? You know, like.
Yeah. I think, like, with the internet, stuff has gotten, like, not as fun, you know?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
It kind of ruined music in a way. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would argue with me and say that it made it better for them because they're, like, the lucky TikToker that, you know, like, or they hopped on YouTube, like, before it was too late to do that, you know? Like, I think when the internet first started being a thing for music, it was really cool. Like, MySpace, like, anyone could upload anything, and then instantly everyone could hear it.
Right.
And, like, a lot of it was fucking terrible, and it didn't matter. Like, it found its home, you know? Like, which is awesome. I think that's how art should be. I think that, you know, you should be able to just, there shouldn't be any, like, middlemen in between, like, a creator and a consumer, or a musician and a fan, whatever. I guess I don't really like to use the word consumer, but it's true. Yeah. We're operating within capitalism, so whatever. but yeah, like, I think it used to be really fucking cool, and now it's just like all kind of sad.
Yeah, there's just so much out there now.
Tour is all you have left. Like,
what is?
Tour. It's like the only thing that's like the same, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, even that like really isn't, once you get to a certain level, you're dealing with like Live Nation and shit, but like, you know, well, the idea of tour and what you're doing is still the same. And that's cool.
I remember people, like, this was maybe 10 years ago or so, like, people were saying like, oh, well, and I do think touring is a little bit different. There were like bands were doing full US tours, and like, now you just don't see that often, or they're breaking them up into separate legs where it's like, okay, we're doing East Coast and that's going to be 3 or 4 weeks. And then we're going to do West Coast. And, you know, it's just, you don't see like, hey, we're going to be on tour for 6 weeks straight. Like that often.
A lot of those bands, like, and people have jobs too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you didn't used to have a job. Like, you know, like even bands that we think are big, like they're kind of like working class musicians, like they took whatever money they maybe made like in the early 2000s and then like invested it into some sort of other business that they have. And then they spent a lot of time on that too.
For sure. For sure.
Which I feel like wouldn't have been a thing like in the 90s or something.
Right.
You know, like just fucking tour.
Yeah.
And make a shit ton of money and sell like records.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree though. It does feel like, you know, I feel like we've gained more from touring and getting in front of people who didn't know who we were than, you know, and then they go and listen to you on Spotify,
right,
or whatever, you know what I mean? It's like, we'll play, you know, every time that we go out, like our streams always go up a little bit before and after we're on tour. And then it kind of like levels out again. Cause it's like people, you know, and once we had vinyl, that was like the big thing for us. Was like, we started actually, I wouldn't say making money, but we like making money versus making profit. But we started like actually making money at the shows. Like I'd be walking away, I'm like, oh my God, we made more off of our merch than we did from the door. Like, this is awesome, you know?
Yeah. So. It's just a glorified t-shirt business.
It is. Yeah. Well, Maddie, this was awesome. I'm glad we got a chance to, I really wanted to talk to you more at the St. Louis show. And I'm glad that we got to spend 40 minutes here just shooting the shit. So I'm definitely stoked for you guys and everything that's happening for you. And, you know, let me know next time you're coming through St. Louis.
For sure.
We'll rip it again.
Hell yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, no problem. Bye.
Bye.